My name is Daryl Kavanagh. I'm from Waterford in Ireland, and I've been involved in the hospitality business most of my life. My family were also involved in publishing, and my father had a newspaper in the city where I'm from. I've recently revived that newspaper to fight the cause that I'm going to speak to you about now. And we've had huge success. We had a 280,000 viewers up to yesterday who are very interested in what we have to say at the moment in relation to Waterford Crystal, which is a huge part of this story,
Okay, well,
which
can you
I
just tell us about your days, as a successful hospitality industry? I mean, it's easy to say that, but we're talking here about things like pubs, nightclubs. What were you up to, and what did you do?
Okay, so I took over my father's original pub with my brother Christopher in around 1994. And at that time, I was living in Dublin with my future wife at that stage, Rebecca. And there was a huge change in the hospitality industry. Nightclubs, people didn't have the money. There was a recession hitting again. And basically, they didn't want to pay. Everybody had a problem paying going to the nightclub. So there was a very famous venue in Dublin called Major Tom's, and I was in it one night, and I just couldn't figure out. There were leaving people in free. They were paying for exemptions. They had DJs. They had security. They had everything else. But what I found out subsequently was they were increasing the price of the alcohol after 12 o'clock. I brought that concept to Waterford from Major Tom's. I started it, and I implemented it into my father's business. He had heart problems, and we took it over completely, and we revolutionized that business. We opened the biggest nightclub in Ireland in 2009, Mantra in Maynooth. We had tropical gardens, we had cocktail bars, we had everything in these gardens. There was a 60-foot waterfall in the one in Maynooth. The one in Waterford in Harvey's had a tropical garden. So we were very groundbreaking in what we did.
Well,
I
it
mean, my
sounds like
plan was.
a revolutionary concept, this idea that as everyone turfs out of the pubs and wants to start drinking in the nightclubs, then you can jack up the price a little bit.
That's it. And we were actually getting more than what we would have got in a door charge. But the evidence of that, I suppose, is what happened in 2006, because the little pub that I started with, that myself and my brother took over from my dad, was sold for 9.5 million euros. After we had developed it over, I think, t 10 years. And it was the biggest sale of a public house outside of Dublin. It still is to this day. From there, then we developed Harvey's. It was very close to the Muldoon's, the original pub, which we had sold for 9.5 million. The smoking ban was a major problem at the time, as you rightly pointed out, because people were outside, girls weren't safe. It was a major problem with traffic and everything else. And I looked at it and I said, number one, they're not drinking if they're outside. Number two, you have major problems with public order if people are outside. You also had this smirching, as they were calling it, which was causing major problems. Girls going out for a cigarette, guys trying to pick them up. Naturally, it was happening. So I decided I had a venue at the back of Harvey's, which was huge. I took the roof off it. I put in tiered roofs. I put in industrial heaters, heated it to 20 degrees all year round. Put in cocktail bars and a full bar, and had tropical trees all over the place. And it went from 4,000 a week. It took me 3 months to do it after I sold Muldoon's. And the first night we opened, we turned over 125,000 euros that night.
Wow.
And
So, what city is this in?
it's in Waterford in Ireland.
Okay, so that sounds like a recipe for success. No, nothing can go wrong from here on.
Nothing. So I from Harvey's, we opened Mantra in Maynooth, just outside Dublin. And while I was constructing, or had it, Mantra being constructed, it was being fitted out at the time. I was asked to go and see my bank manager in Bank of Scotland in Waterford, with a girl called Emer Fagan. His name was John Fagan. She was Emer Dalton. So myself and my brother went in. And my another brother had opened a business on the Dunmore Road. I had previously said, to the manager of Bank of Scotland before he retired, Jim Ryan, who was a fantastic friend of our families and really supported us and brought us to where we are to where we were before we were destroyed, I should say. But they called us in and they said, "Look, you're going to have to take over your brother's business." And I said, "No, what? No." I said, "I told Jim, years ago, not to lend him money under any circumstances. Not that they shouldn't lend him money, but I didn't want it associated with our business. He should do business somewhere else. We had the relationship." So I said, "No." He said, "If you do not take over this loan, you will never open Mantra." So, to make a long story short, we had no choice. It was 2008. There was people jumping out through windows.
And so this
We
was
had
part of your mission to take your successful business model closer to Dublin, really.
Well, yes, that's right. That's what they were trying. That's what they were blackmailing me with. I was probably 3 months off opening that club, and I knew it was going to be a massive success. Maynooth has one of the biggest universities in Ireland. It's a short hop from Dublin. It's a commute. It's got big residential around it. I knew I was onto something good. Most people would have looked at Maynooth and they would have said the population is 5,000. I didn't look at it like that. I looked at it was a magnet. Mantra was a magnet. And the opening night, there was a queue 1 mile long. They had to bring in police from Dublin. We had Sophie Ellis-Bextor opened it for us. All the Coronation Street stars were there. It was huge. All the big sports personalities. I can name. They're all there. The rugby players, they were all there. So it was a massive, massive success, and it turned over 150,000 euros every single week, up to the time that I was called again into Bank of Scotland. Now, the second time I was called in, they told me that I had to start paying interest and capital, even though we had just opened Mantra and we had a deal for 1 year. And I said, "Look, this is too much. We're in a financial crisis. I've taken over my brother's business. You're really pushing. I'm giving you 20,000 every month, every single month, and we are stuck in the middle of a financial crisis." I said, "No, I'm not doing it." I just stood firm. And that's what they wanted. They defaulted my loans. They appointed a receiver. They had a pre-pact. They phoned me the next morning and they had appointed receivers to all of our pubs based on the fact that we were insolvent because we had taken over a company that was insolvent, my brother's company, which they had blackmailed us into taking over.
Now, were there
So,
debts? What did your brother have debts that you didn't realize know about at the
well,
time when you took it over?
it wasn't even about the debts. It's about the fact that I was asked. Like the business that he had was no way related to what we did. We were into big clubs, we're into city centre pubs. This was a pub in a suburb of Waterford, a good suburb of Waterford, but not a place where I would want to have a pub. You've got to be there all the time. It's very personal. Not our business. That's it. End of story. I wouldn't touch
No,
it with a
I
10 foot.
understand that, but
Yeah,
can you just
yeah.
talk a bit about this crucial point about figures? So, how much a debt did this company of your brother's have, and how much did you have coming in? What was your arrangement about paying the loans back to Bank of Scotland?
Okay, so at the time it wasn't trading well at all. It never really worked. And basically, what we had to do was go in, try and turn it around. I did what I did with Harvey's. I took a portion of the roof off the back. I tried to incorporate a smoking area into it. We refurbished the bar and refitted it, but it just didn't work. It's a very cliquey area, and there's a very bad element on the Dunmore Road. The guys, the haters, the jealousers, the ones that don't like you driving a nice car, they all go out there
Yeah,
and
so
you're
with
dependent.
hindsight, that was just the wrong spot.
It was the wrong spot. They should never have given him the money. It was reckless lending. They did not look at where he was opening the pub. They did not look at whether he would work in the pub. It was a disaster. It was reckless lending. Coming back to what you were saying about how much was it, I think he owed about 1.2 at the time. The pub was not worth that. It had no revenue. It was only doing about 1,500 quid a week, and he paid 1.2 million for it.
So when
Happened
the
to
Bank
occur
of
what he.
Scotland first talked to you about this, did you think, yeah, this is doable, we can sort this out, we can sort that other debt out? Because they're suddenly turning around to you and saying, oh, you've defaulted, matey.
I'll put it to you like this, right? I only took over the debt. I took over the debt. I probably did it a little bit because my brother was there, but I took it over because it was going to destroy me if they moved on Mantra. But I knew that once I was only paying interest as per the deal that we had with them, that I would be able to probably be able to subsidize the Cove. And when we came out of the financial crash, I could probably buy it out at a discount. That's what I was thinking. That way I got Mantra open. I kept my brother out of any trouble. We honored all our creditors and everybody had a happy ending. That wasn't Bank of Scotland's plan at all. Bank of Scotland's plan was through Michael McAteer of Grant Thornton, who they had a prearranged a receivership with. The plan was to grab the turnover from Mantra, and they did that. They ran it for 4 years until they drained it, until they ruined it, and then it was sold on. Now, I was involved when it came up for sale again with two guys who just took advantage of the fact that I had to declare bankruptcy because I thought I was bankrupt. But I mean, the fact about it
Well, hang on,
was
just
that.
before you jump ahead too far, when did you realise that actually that Mantra was gone and you were this all this effort that you put in that the bank had taken it off you?
Yeah. So when they appointed the receiver, immediately I consulted a lawyer and we challenged it in the High Court in Ireland. And we applied for examinership, which would have given us 120 days to get all everything right and go back. So we were granted receivership because we were so strong. And the judge in the case, Judge Kelly, asked for a report on our business and ordered Bank of Scotland to pay for that report. Now, when he got that report back, when he had to decide whether we were getting examinership or not, that report was scathing for Bank of Scotland. And it said that our business was one of the most profitable, most well-run hospitality businesses they had ever seen. And we had 300 people working for us. You know, we had 10, nearly 15 million turnover a year. You know, we were going really well. So the judge said at that hearing, he said, I'm awarding examinership and I'm halving your debt. I'm knocking your debt down by half. Go, Mr. Kavanagh, get the money, come back to me, and I'm going to support you 100%. A guy related to me was supposed to get the money, he was supposed to deliver it. It was the only chance I had. And I also found out about a scheme in Spain where I could raise money. I sent down 790,000 through my solicitor in Waterford. And it was lost because somebody in the bank was working with the company raising the bond and they took the million. That wiped me out completely. So when I went back for the examinership, I was nearly 1 million euros lighter. My lawyer never brought up the fact that Bank of Scotland had forced us to take over a debt and the examinership fell. And that is exactly what happened. Now, I am, as I said, in the process of overturning my bankruptcy at the moment. And that is one of the things that will be addressed during that.
Okay, well, the
Along.
receivership, once you've decided to go for bankruptcy, how did you decide to do, why did you decide to do that and what happened?
Okay, so the solicitor that I told you just about there that didn't advise the judge that we were coerced into taking over a debt. He advised me to. He said, "Look, you know," he said, "you're a good guy, Dara. You know, you're an entrepreneur. You want to move on. Get this behind you. You know, you should consider bankruptcy." And he said it to me while we were having a drink. You know, because we were pretty close. We got close during the receivership and the examinership process. Now, I had a product at the time that I had invented, and I was going to the States. And when I re reflect on it now, it really looks like he wanted to get rid of me. I went to the States and I did some things that I wasn't proud of. I hit alcohol and everything else pretty hard. And I was not the man that I was pre-2008, I can tell you that. But, you know, I went there, and while I was there then, he was talking to me. I was talking, he was saying, you know, if you consider the bankruptcy. And eventually I just said to myself, I'll do it. And you know, there is no way that I was of sane mind because During 2010, I had three banks that hit me bang, bang, bang for everything that I owned, they took off me, and I was not in default on one of them, not in any way. And it was all over the fact that I was told to take over a company that I had nothing to do with.
Well, look,
And
most of people would understand that if you're paying off the interest, the bank is going to leave you alone.
well, they're not, because not in Ireland. Because what happened was there's a bigger picture here. And this is something, that I didn't realize until a year ago. So a year ago, the guy that they linked my loans to get him into NAMA, as I thought at the time, Michael Walsh, he's a builder in Waterford, he owns Walsh Brothers. So I thought that what they had done was handy fix. They want him in NAMA, they want to get all anything out of the bank. Put my 6 million loans with his to bring him over the 20 million threshold for NAMA. Now, you know what NAMA is. NAMA was a bad bank created by the Irish government to take all bad loans out of the banks and li literally leave them with a clean balance sheet. That was the plan. Now, in my case, my loans were performing. I paid them 370,000 from a sale that I made of one of the properties in 2010. And in 2010, they put me into NAMA, even though my loans were or my the liquidity of my loans were very high. I mean, I only was borrowed at, I would say, 70, 75%. We have GDPR requests in at the moment, and I'm getting all the details. So, and it's a long time ago, so I don't have the exact figures off the top of my head, but I know there was no reason for me to go into NAMA, except for in that portfolio was a very small site at Waterford Crystal. Now, Waterford Crystal was went into receivership in 2009, and Deloitte were appointed as receivers, and they took on all the assets of the company, including the site, and the business and the brand. Now, what happened then was it's very, very, very shady. So they've put all my land into NAMA. My site was sold to a local developer called Noel Frisby, who had a site next to me in Waterford Crystal, because Waterford Crystal were very they needed money in around 2006, and I was approached to buy part of that site, which I did. I had the money to buy it. Now, this guy Frisby also owned part of the site. That site that I owned was put into NAMA and Bank of Ireland. Now, once that went in, he bought it immediately. The business was sold off to Eastern Europe. An iconic brand, Irish brand, was sold off to a company in Europe by Deloitte, and it's now been made like 10p trinket glass in Eastern Europe. The Waterford brand that hangs in Buckingham Palace. That is what has happened to it. And the heritage of Waterford has been sold. But what happened was, once the brand was gone, this guy bought the site, the whole lot of it, everything for 3 million from NAMA. And his brother-in-law was connected to one of the head guys very close to NAMA. He bought it for 3 million, and he's just sold off a good portion of the site and made a 30 million profit out of it and kept 17 acres. And he could not have done that unless he got my site and ruined me. And that is basically where we are at the moment. And this
Well,
is
look,
why
I
I've
mean,
started to talk about
your business of particularly these large hospitalities, drinking dens, and this sort of thing is a tough and it can potentially be a very nasty world. So, did you realise that when you were getting into this?
I was brought up in that business. We grew. My brother did the front door of our businesses, and he was our centurion in every bar that we had. And we brought on very good people. Like, our motto was, if you stop it at the front door, you never have to worry about what's behind you, only handbag stuff. And we ran our business like that, and we had no public order offences. We had very little insurance claims. Our staff would tell you, we were the best operators probably in the Southeast. So we knew what we were doing. We made a lot of money out of what we
But you're
did. And
also up
we.
against other operators that aren't so scrupulous.
Well, we weren't really, because this is the thing. I mean, the guy that paid us 9.5 million from Muldoon's went into receivership 6 months later. But he didn't go into receivership because he was bundled into NAMA or because he was made to take over a debt. He went into receivership because he was stupid. He paid myself and my brother 9.5 million for our pub. And that's what happened. He took on too much debt. We used the money that we had and we put it into Harvey's. We spent the money on doing the gardens and putting and getting Mantra, and we were in very, very good shape. I personally, in 2008, didn't even have a mortgage on my home. I had no loans on my cars, and I had a yacht in Villamora that was worth 2.8 million with 700 grand owed on it.
So
And they black.
how did this whole affair affect your standard of living, your lifestyle? Because it sounds to me it's almost like a great rise to wealth with all sorts of accoutrements that all people who have no money wish for. And then what happened after all this?
Well, this is the thing, Tony. I was sitting at home. Suddenly, there's a receiver appointed to my business. Within a month, we're put into NAMA for no reason. The guy who was the manager, our relationship manager on the account in Bank of Ireland, goes on leave for mental stress. We can't get in touch with him. Then on top of that, I'm down in Portugal doing some work on my boat, and I get a phone call from Lombard to say, we want your boat, and if you don't give it to us, the deeds that you put up as security for the leasing on Mantra, which the receiver is in now, we will tell him about them, and you'll lose your deeds. And they were my wife's deeds on her family land, and I couldn't leave that happen, so I had to sacrifice my boat. I gave it to them. I handed them the keys, and I was set up. I am in the process of getting the information from NAMA, from Deloitte, and from all the relevant people that need to give me the
I
information
mean,
under
did you
GDPR.
get the impression there was actually quite a high-level operation against you?
I do think that now. I never thought that. I thought that the bank were clearing debt that they thought was going to become a problem out of their branch because I really had lost all my source of income. But having, reflecting on that, I had prime properties. I had 13 luxury houses in Dunmore East, which had just been completed. Dunmore East is, it's a jewel in Waterford. If you've property, especially where I had it, it is very valuable. I had five townhouses in, the Kensington of Waterford. And, they were worth a lot of money. My assets were very good. So if I had reflected the time and I was thinking clearly and they hadn't clouded me by all hitting me together, I might have looked at it logically, like you just pointed out very rightly. But it's very easy to do that when you're standing way back for it and you're not in that position. At this stage, I had hit the bottle. I had started losing my family. My wife didn't know where to look. She was hiding. It wasn't that she was hiding. We had a fantastic marriage. We had the perfect family. We had no debt. And, she just basically withdrew because she didn't know how to help me. And my cry for help really was the way I was acting. And nobody looked at me and said, well, hang on, before 2007, he's this brilliant businessman, brilliant husband, brilliant father. And now this. What's going on? Nobody asked. And for 15 years, it went on like that. And everybody thought I was nuts until a year ago, until I started Fraud Waterford, until I started exposing this. I'm now opening a global platform for AI, which is launching the end of August. And I just got my head together. I became sober 2 years ago. And I will never, ever look at anything. Again, nothing will go into my body that shouldn't be in there unless it grows out of the earth and it's healthy. That's it.
Well,
I
look,
rewired my brain.
but also, I mean, the basic premise seems to be that after 2008, the banks started to look for their customers who were indebted, obviously, to see if they could asset strip them to boost their own back balance sheet. And the idea is that
Absolutely.
if you can destroy this business, you can take its assets.
Well, let me give you a perfect example, right? I have a team that are working with me, and we're using AI an awful lot for research, and it is a fantastic tool. And anybody who tells you that it's like Google, you put something in and it gives you an answer, they are completely wrong. What AI does, it considers everything and then considers giving you the best answer to what you've asked for, right? And you have to be very careful. I've written questions for 3 days for one thing. So I mean, what would I say? Here's what I say. In 2006, the global financial system was changed to paper. Nobody put money in banks anymore. There's no accountability on how much money is printed or how much money is in the world or where it is, where it goes, and what's done with it. And when money goes in for a bailout, I did a simple exercise a couple of months ago for a girl who was head of legal in a very famous bank in Ireland, who spotted the asset stripping while it was going on, brought it to the attention of a colleague, and she was blacklisted. What was done to her is like a plot out of a movie. And it's all coming out because Panorama, Celia Watkins, has been in very close touch with me. And this is how it was exposed. So that what I would say is there needs to be Lloyds are the biggest offender in this. The vulture funds that got hold of these loans. And I mean, what was happening was that they basically had bonds. So if they default, there were default bonds. So once they defaulted on a person who had a mortgage, they sent out a default notice. Now, most people thought that was a legal notice and they responded to it. Some people even just surrendered their properties, their buy-to-lets. They just didn't want the hassle of it. And what happened was once they issued that default, they got paid 70% of what was owed on the loan. They also got the property back and they sold the property. And they got the proceeds of that, less what they had borrowed. So they had a double payday. And this is what is going on, and it's still going on in the UK. At the moment, there's about 150 to 200,000 mortgagees who I think are suicidal. They are in prison. They cannot get out. We're helping some in Waterford. We've written to the likes of Pepper and Mars and Cerberus. And you know, we don't take their bullying. We give it to them. We issue them with hard legal facts, and they back off. I had a girl the other day. They reduced her payments by
I mean,
half.
okay, so you're saying here that these default notices aren't really worth the paper they're written on?
Well, they're not worth the paper they're written on. What I'm saying really is that it's one big vicious circle. There is a financial crash coming again. It's 2:28. It's 2:30, and it's going to happen again. It's going to happen again because the financial world is in turmoil again. These people can keep lending recklessly, draining their balance sheets, and then turning to the public and ripping them off to reinflate them. And that is what has been happening since the early 70s. Lloyds are the biggest culprits of this, and they must be shut down at all costs. So Anthony Stansfield has been speaking to me. He was the ex-chief of the Metropolitan Police. You've got guys like David Leahy, CID, who brought down HBOS. I'm speaking to these all the time, in conjunction with Celia Watkins from Panorama. Anthony Stansfield, his complete interview was cut out of the Panorama programme, and everything he had to say solidified all the claims that have been made by the public. And it was done because Lloyd's got to legal in Panorama. I believe
Okay,
that
well, this
one.
is interesting. We've interviewed Anthony before. Can you maybe pray see what he was saying that got cut out? Because this is BBC lawyers, no doubt, acting for Lloyd's.
Absolutely, 100%. Because look, look, it's like COVID, isn't it? You know, it's a contagion. Lloyds brought it into Ireland through Halifax, through Bank of Scotland. The Irish banks picked up on it. They saw they could get away with it. They're probably the biggest corrupt organisation in the world in Ireland anyway, and the government with them. And they've just been allowed to do it because if the government were seeing that they hadn't done something about their reckless lending, and they had to go to the public to reinflate their balance sheets, they're incompetent. So they're always going to hide it now. This is why my RICO case for the overturning of my bankruptcy pulls every single corrupt politician, banker, and everything else in Ireland, the UK, and throughout Europe into this. But the bigger thing here is the girl I'm telling you about, who was head of legal, has opened an office in Holland. At the moment, there's 80,000 victims of asset stripping in Holland. She is representing 1,000 of them with a girl over there. I can't really remember her name at the moment, but she lectured on asset stripping. That's how they met. And you know, with the response that we've had, and what's going on in the world, and the way the people feel about migration, and the way they feel about governments, and Nigel Farage is a complete arsehole. he was dealing with one of the people who was on the Panorama program, Martin Wolves. He pulled on him completely as soon as he got his own financial affairs sorted out. From who? Lloyds. When they won the mayoral election, I sent a message to the mayor election saying, "I hope you've checked to see that none of your constituents were acid stripped." No reply. Nothing. He will be another one who will let it happen again. And this country, my country, I live in this country, I live in Cardiff now, it needs a Donald Trump. I don't like the guy. I don't like his what he does. But you know, there's a lot of what he's doing has to happen. If it doesn't, I believe the very, very foundation of how what we exist in is going to collapse. It's going to collapse,
Well,
and
maybe
our
though. Well,
heritage
look,
is going to be gone.
I
What?
do wonder sometimes about the Irish, because you fought a war of independence against us, the English, and beat us out of the way, First World War, and then embraced the European Union. So you've gone
Well,
from
that's
London running
wrong.
the show to Brussels running the show.
That's wrong. I forgive me, but that's not what happened. What happened was the Irish rose up against the British in back, you know, it was going on for 1,000 years, and we won't get into politics. It was something that happened, and it happened. But what we're dealing with now, and in the 1916 rising, there was more Irish killed in that war than there was of any other race. They fought with the British side by side in Flanders, and there's a very famous song about it. The Furies wrote. It's called The Green Fields of France. Fantastic song. So, you know, we fought with the British, but what we're fighting now is far greater than the threat we had for the British. We're fighting for our lives. We're fighting for our heritage. Our heritage is being diluted out of our country at the moment. And there's idiots running our country like there is in this country, and they don't give a shit about
So
what
can you
happens
turn
to the
to
guy in the
Dublin?
house.
Can you turn to Brussels to do anything about this anymore?
Yes, I can. With the RICO that we're bringing, I have a Zoom meeting today with a legal team. We're just about to issue a press release, probably this week, and that will name who my legal team are, and we will then make an application to the Southern Federal Court in New York, where Harvey Weinstein was ruthlessly taken. He was taken out of the way, taken out, and that's where we will have our trial. He got what he deserved, and so will these people. But it will be a global platform, and it will happen very, very soon. I have got to reverse my bankruptcy because I was not bankrupt, and everything that collapses the minute that judge reverses my bankruptcy, because that's the only issue. Was I bankrupt or was I not bankrupt? Judge, they attached me to this debt, it wasn't mine. Judge, they attached me to this company. You can see from the company's house, I had nothing to do with it. I had nothing to do, and they can't show you anything to prove that I had anything to do with it. And on the basis of that, I declared bankruptcy. And now this water of crystal slide. And here's all the people, and the CIA, the FBI, and the FACC, all of these people will have to investigate my claims before the case is heard. So it just bolsters everything that I'm doing. I'm only going in on the basis of my bankruptcy, but they've got to initiate a federal investigation. And once they do, it's RICO. RICO is treble damages and anything from 15 to 30 years in federal prison in the
This
USA.
is the organised crime legislation. Well, I think many of us think of the banksters as organised crime, actually. I wonder if you could just finally give us your idea about, from all your experience, what's your advice to anyone when they're dealing with banks?
I honestly, Tony, I don't think you can deal with banks anymore, because I think the minute that you sign a mortgage or a lease agreement or anything else, there's wording in there that no ordinary person is going to understand. And if you're borrowing a 3.5 grand for a car, let's just say, because there was a huge instance last week of Lloyds again, there was a lot of corruption in car leasing. It's hundreds of millions again, and they got a small fine. So what I'm saying is, the minute you sign an agreement, you don't know what you're signing, and you don't know how they're going to manipulate it when they need to reinflate their balance sheets to take your asset or take your cash. There's one lady in the UK at the moment, they took everything she had. She was probably worth over 100 million. It's online. She had hotels. And it would make you cry. There's another lady, her husband got a heart attack. She caught him trying to commit suicide. Lloyd's again. It's all online. It's out there. People are aware of it, but they just won't look. Here's the typical. This puts it in a nutshell. We'll probably have 400,000 viewers by this time, by tonight, by midnight tonight. There is not one comment on our page. There's people sharing, you get a couple little comments, but for 400,000 euros, you're not getting it. Now, where I'm pushing to all the people involved, and I'm saying you're a fraudster, you're involved in corruption. And the things I'm saying, if they weren't factual, would be slanderous. I haven't had one letter. I haven't had one complaint off Facebook, and my Facebook page is as healthy as you are, Tony. So I'm telling you now, I'm in the right direction, and I'm going to prove it very, very soon. And everybody who's hurting my country and my city, they're going down. And I have two kids. They were born in Cardiff. I will make sure it happens here as well, through platforms, through AI, and through proper media channels like
Okay, well,
yours.
look, if people are interested in finding and following your case, and also maybe even having a chat with you if they're a victim of Lloyd's, what would you suggest? Who would you suggest is the best good point of contact for Lloyd's and
Okay,
Rathbones,
well,
and also to follow you and your personal story?
sure. So my Facebook is Daryl Kavanagh Cardiff. So if you want, you can get me on there on Facebook. Just PM me. If I can help you, I will. We have a full team behind us. We have a legal team, and we have counsel. So we look at it. If there's merit, we will help you as much as we can. You know, there's not that many of us, and we must concentrate on Ireland. But I will look at cases in the UK, and we're discussing at the moment. I spoke to you about it yesterday, about setting up a fraud page for the UK in a city which we've identified already that has two major frauds that we can start feasting on already. And I think these things will be like the guardians of cities in time to come. In hand with AI, AI will pick up algorithms where there's fraud, and it will warn the people who run these platforms so that they can report on it. Like, you know, in the old days, back in the 1600s, when newspapers had to inform people, there was no social media, there was no phones. Newspapers were the only form of informing people about what was going on. And today we have a big, big dilution of that because of AI, but I think AI can help us as well. We've got to stop another financial crash, or it will destroy everything that we have.
Yeah, well,
Everything.
it might be that they are planning a financial crash and planning to run off with it. Anyway, can you
Of
just spell
course they
your
are.
pla can you could you just spell your name, Daryl? Because not
Yeah,
everyone is
sure.
familiar with Irish spellings.
So, well, my name is not Irish. I don't know what my parents were thinking, but anyway. So, as I said, my Facebook page is Daryl Kavanagh Cardiff on Facebook. Our fraud Waterford page is Fraud Waterford Auctioneers and Bankers, and that is very popular at the moment. And we have a lot of stuff on there for British people as well, where we can help. Once we know the circumstances of what they're doing, we will weigh in because we don't care. We're going for their jugular.
Well, I
That's
think
it.
you're an amazing survivor, Daryl. Thanks ever so much for joining us.
Tony, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.